morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. Welcome to DevelopPod episode number 22. My name is Tanya, and I'm joined today in our virtual studio with Christian.
Hey, hi, Tanya.
Hello, and James.
Hi, Tanya. Hello, everyone.
Hello. So today we're going to be discussing the current climate of ELT, and we'll also be responding and reflecting on the recent podcasts that we've had to share our own ideas and our own perceptions and perspectives of what we have been talking about recently with our other experts.
So it was back in April that we did an episode on teaching online in response to the beginning of the lockdown. So let's begin by perhaps reflecting on our experiences as online teachers, as we've all become since then. So Christian, how has it been for you? Have you been teaching online, and how has it felt?
Well, going back to April, I helped to set up relatively rudimentary systems, I would say, for online teaching, because it's a real process as an administrator or as a director of studies, whatever. To set up those systems, it's a long-term project. It can't just be done overnight. And I think a lot of schools, perhaps I'm projecting, but I think talking to colleagues in the industry, other directors of studies, for example, they realize that it's a long-term project, you know, that can take several semesters, several terms to do and to do it well. But I did manage to set up quite rudimentary systems for teaching online to migrate our classes working at a very small language school. So our existing and future students could move online. Unfortunately, that wasn't taken up by the management, and they couldn't take the leap of faith for various reasons. And we were all furloughed, which I don't know if our international listeners will understand that, but basically we are paid by the government to not work. And it's an incredible situation to be in, actually, a very privileged situation to be in. And so all thoughts of having classes online were somewhat abandoned. We did have just one student, in fact, who was being taught online, and I managed to train up a couple of teachers to do that. And so systems are in place for the future, but unfortunately, as a small school, and there are many big providers out there, huge amount of competition, both established online providers and people who have jumped onto this, I don't want to say bandwagon, because it was a very necessary bandwagon, but in some ways there's an element of let's jump onto this thing and cling to this moving vehicle, if you like, of online teaching. And some providers have done it extremely well, and some were already doing it. And our small school couldn't really compete with that, or at least that was the thought.
And Tanya, how about for you? What's the experience been like?
It's been a very interesting experience, and I feel like when I reflect on the discussion we had with the Teaching Online podcast, I've really moved out of a particular zone, which I think at that time was, what is online teaching? Having no experience of teaching online, and then suddenly as the program coordinator for a teacher training program that has incorporated the CELTA, suddenly having to figure out how the content, the theory aspect, plus the practicum was going to be delivered and evaluated online was an extremely stressful time for me. Lots of meetings, lots of discussions. And again, it was always kind of blind leading the blind. None of us really knew how to move forward. So we were doing our best, trying to get as many resources wrapped in, folded in, trying to look at what our learning management system could provide. And I would say for me, it was very interesting progress from what is online teaching and trying not to feel too pressured and stressed out by thinking I needed this incredible sharp learning curve and trying to be okay with doing what I could, to what does it mean to teach online in my context as a teacher trainer, which was also giving me quite a lot of stress, I have to say, because again, I do have perfectionistic tendencies, and it was very, very, very challenging from a teacher trainer perspective, suddenly teaching online and trying to teach people how to teach online. Again, through when it was new for us in the first place as well. And I finally had this kind of aha moment where I realized I needed to shift my perspective from that to what does it mean for me to teach online in my context. And that gave me a little bit more permission to relax.
What did you learn? What did you discover is your way of teaching online?
Well, first of all, what I really discovered was to stop looking at what everybody else was doing, to stop feeling like I needed to understand every single tool, technique, online theory out there, and to kind of take a step back and revert more to my own place of confidence, where I know how to teach. I've been teaching for 30 years. I've been a teacher trainer since 1998. I know what it means to connect with people. And so for me, it was trusting that I could do this synchronously without a whole lot of bells and whistles and online strategies. So it was really more of doing what I know I could do synchronously and use the asynchronous time to support and extend what I already do.
In the previous episode, we mentioned the imposter syndrome. Did that come up for you?
It sure did. It really did. But you know, I have to say, there's this whole thing about, I really had a lot of shame about it. I have to say, I felt a lot of shame, a lot of discomfort. And I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown. And she's very much focusing on shame. And the way out of shame is vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And courage. And I really took a leaf out of her book on that, because I started normalizing that with my students. And I kept saying, I'm not an expert here. However, let's try this. Can we experiment with that? And it was really great, because some of my students actually started coming on board, where I would do something in the virtual classroom, and they would like raise their hand and say, can you launch a poll here? could we do a survey, or could you allow multi-user function? And so because I was quite open and accepting of that imposter syndrome and allowing myself to even share that with my students, it turned into this really nice learning experience for all of us.
Which becomes more a promotion of student autonomy, which was what we've been looking for. Maybe taking down the barriers and becoming more vulnerable and learning ourselves, which we're all, you know, is we're told, you know, constantly that we need to engage in CPD and lifelong learning. But sometimes we put up this front of still, I'm the knowledge, I'm the oracle, you know, what's the character from Star Wars?
R2-D2?
I am R2-D2. That will do.
No, not sure that's a good metaphor.
I think you find it's Yoda.
I think it was Yoda I was thinking of. Thank you, Tanya. So yeah, sometimes there's this idea I need to be a Yoda type figure, right? But as soon as those barriers come down, we're all learning, and it's so much more human.
It is. And it's something that we tell newer teachers in their training process as well. Like, don't get too scared. You don't have to be the sage on the stage, the font of all knowledge. You know, embrace the learning experience for yourself, because it's very engaging for your learners to be part. They're participating in your own learning journey. And that's actually quite exciting. And it's even more interesting with that loop feedback, because they were also trying to learn how to be teachers in the online context too. So kind of watching me stagger and be a bit clumsy with what I was doing, it was actually useful learning for them, so long as I had to keep clear, don't get defensive, don't get stressed, don't beat yourself up, be cool with this, embrace the moment, it's not about the product, you know, all of the mantras that I tell myself. And in fact, they've had actually really good positive experiences themselves in learning how to teach online. They're getting good feedback from their students. So it's actually, it has worked out.
I think I'll remember that. I'm going to be, I think, teaching a CELTA online, as I mentioned to one-on-one before, and that will be a huge learning curve for me, because although I've taught CELTA before many times face to face and taught online, it's another thing weaving those things together, and it'll be a whole new learning curve for me too.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It's definitely an interesting learning curve, just, you know, staying open, and I have to say, there's a few things that have really helped me, kind of harking back a bit to the interview with Rachel and also with Phil, trying to figure out, you know, where your support systems are, who is going to help you in this journey. And I would say it was learning new tools, and being okay with experimenting with them, seeking feedback from my students and bringing them on board, but also quite crucially, talking to my peers, talking to the other people who were in the same boat at my college who are also suddenly trying to learn and teach online. It was such a relief when some of my equally experienced colleagues were telling me that it was taking them like 12 hours to plan a 2-hour synchronous lesson with an 1-hour asynchronous component. And it suddenly it was like, oh my God, it's not just me, you know, because normally I can walk into a classroom and do things really, you know, from your experience. But in this context, there's so much more involved in detail. And then practicing Cole, Kristen, you were talking about mindfulness a lot with in your interview with Phil. Mm-hmm. And I really took that on board too, because I did take a 12-week mindfulness program here in Canada, in Ontario. And I remember one of the things that we were often told to do in these moments was practice Cole, and that's C-O-A-L. So C is curiosity, O is openness, A is acceptance, and L is love. Mm-hmm. And that idea of self-compassion is what that L was. And so I would say realistically, what has helped me the most was collaborating and talking with my peers and actually practicing that kind of self-compassion and acceptance of the situation as it is.
Yeah, right. James, have you been teaching online? And has this time changed for you, your teaching online? And if so, how?
Well, I was one of those lucky people who was already partly online before this began. So the adaption for me wasn't particularly big. You know, I had to move a lot of my face-to-face students online, but it wasn't particularly difficult. So I was lucky in that respect. And my other job as a materials writer, you know, that's basically been exactly the same. So I'm lucky in the respect that my personal teaching, I haven't had to go through a lot of changes. What I have been doing as well, though, is I've been part of a online community for young learner teachers, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. kind of a bit ironic because I'm not a young learner teacher, but I've been there trying to help mentoring these teachers with technology, because obviously I'm not in a position to help them with pedagogy. But it's been really, really interesting to be part of those discussions, because I think if anyone in our teaching community has been dropped in it recently, I mean, if you think it's been tough for us, imagine if you have been, you know, if you teach young learners and you've never taught online before, and all of a sudden you've got a group of, you know, 10, 5-year-olds, and every activity that you've ever used in the classroom, everything you've ever done, all of a sudden is out the window and you just can't do that anymore. And so being part of that community and being there and collaborating with those teachers has been very eye-opening for me, and really, really instructive. So I've really enjoyed being part of that. And I was able to contribute to a book, which is about emergency remote teaching, which is the label that we should really accurately be giving this situation that we've been in recently, because this is not normal teaching online. This is emergency, or has been emergency remote teaching. Those are, I think there's a distinction between those two things. And so I was, very grateful to have the opportunity to contribute to the free book that we wrote about this. Maybe I can put a link in the show notes if anyone's interested.
I'm sure they will be.
So for my personal teaching, it's not been a huge change, but I at the same time, I think I've, because of the experiences I've had, I've been able to learn a lot nonetheless.
So it feels like there's been a seismic change, and that's an understatement, over the last few months, not only with coronavirus around the world and all of the effects there, but also the backdrop of continual environmental destruction and campaigns to rectify, to heal the world. And then, of course, the massive, huge changes and protests, not only in the United States, but around the world, as a result of Black Lives Matter. I think we've all been shaken by so many events to our very core.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, I think it's going to take us a long time to kind of digest this, but the point is that we have to, right? And I think that as part of the ELT profession, we we have a lot of serious questions within our profession which are related to this topic that we have to seriously consider, whether that's native speakerism, representation in ELT materials, linguistic colonialism, and so on. So there's a lot of these topics that are serious and that need serious consideration. And I hope that on the podcast, this is something that we can come back to and discuss maybe at a later date. But I agree with you. It's been a huge time, which I think has prompted a lot of reflection by a lot of people. And I hope that for us as individuals and as TDSIG committee members and our listeners, of course, as well, we all have to play our role in reflecting on what this time is teaching us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting to think that this is in the year 2020. And I think it's fascinating because we always talk about clarity of vision being represented by 2020 vision. And when I think about everything that's been happening, I think vision and clarity and like the idea of uncovering reality and seeing things for what they really are and then dealing with that truth, I'm not sure it could be a more appropriately numerical year. It really sums it up. It is about being 2020 and having 2020 vision, applying it to things that maybe we just haven't looked at enough in the past.
I think that's a really good point about 2020, Tanya, and having clarity of vision. I think we need to listen more and be reflective, as you say, James. But there's also a time when we need to act. And my housemate was actually telling me about a Nina Simone record that he was listening to, and I listened to it. And it was about essentially Black Lives Matter all those years ago when Nina Simone was singing. And she was bemoaning the fact in the song that nothing changes. That was back in the 1960s. And there comes a point after reflection that we need to actually make changes. And yeah, that may not be now, but it may be now. What can we do right now to make changes, to listen, to make materials, for example, more diverse, to get experts involved if we're not the experts, however, make significant changes. There's things we know we need to do.
Okay, let's take a little break and then we'll come back and talk about teacher mental health. So welcome back to DevelopPod. In episode 20, Christian interviewed Phil Longwell about teacher well-being and mental health. And this was a great interview. I really enjoyed it, as did a lot of people online. We had a fantastic reaction. So I'm wondering now, Christian, after a couple of months, how are you reflecting on that interview?
Well, gosh, thank you. First of all, it was a really enjoyable episode to do. And I suppose Phil and I both brought something of the personal into that, and maybe that's what made it quite engaging. And it made me reflect, and I think it did for Phil as well. One of the things that was mentioned that we both found fascinating and spoke together about outside the recording time when we recorded the interview was the fact that people perhaps who have experienced mental health issues, who have had mental health crises, and I think most of us have had some, to some extent, at various levels of extremity. But those of us who've had some maybe slightly more severe crisis can cope better in situations like this, which is actually quite interesting. We have the life skills to do that. And for me personally, and I think partly I can say as a result of my having had a breakdown in the past, I coped really well with COVID. And I'm quite proud of myself for doing that. And I've managed to maintain an equilibrium between being very busy, which is what I tend to do anyway, fit a million things in, with real quality time for myself and taking breaks. That's an ever-developing process, I think. And I need to perfect that, or not actually, maybe not be a perfectionist in my in my search for balance and equilibrium. And let myself off the hook sometimes. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's the key.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Christian, because one of the takeaway points for me in your interview that I actually wrote down, you do not need to be a perfect teacher or prove your worth in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's certainly a trap that I fall into as well. Mm-hmm. So that idea of building resilience, having that resilience from past experiences, being aware of when that trigger comes in of, oh, I'm not being perfect and I'm feeling stressed again. And also that idea of incorporating more gratitude practices. Mm-hmm. That was another thing I took away from that interview that I found very, very useful.
Yeah, I'm certainly feeling grateful for so much. And I remember to be grateful every day for so many things. We have a lot of stress thrown at us, and particularly in a career like teaching. Okay, it's not the hardest, most technical, most pressured career in the world. However, there is a certain amount of pressure on teachers, especially when we're responding to new events like this and translating everything online. And so I've managed to, by and large, do that.
And Tanya, in episode 21, you spoke to Rachel Roberts, following up on the same themes of teacher well-being. Another fantastic interview, another interview that people really enjoyed. So how do you reflect on that experience and that episode now?
Mm. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. It was a pleasure speaking with Rachel. She's very, very knowledgeable. And I think she shares her knowledge base with such a lovely feeling of compassion and empathy. She comes across as we're all here together. She's not an expert from way up on high. She's experienced a lot of things herself. So I really appreciated that, having that conversation. And I feel that these topics are just so important to kind of normalize these experiences that we have so that people don't feel so isolated if they do have an issue like both her and I were talking about, with burnout and feeling overwhelmed and then feeling like a failure on top of that. And so I think bringing that to the surface is it's very comforting for people. We did talk about a few resources, which I also thought was useful. And I kind of went on to look even more. I think one of us mentioned the idea of breathing and breathing exercises. And so I actually went on to find a guy who's apparently an expert in breathing. His name is James Nestor. And funnily enough, he just published this book, like I think a few days ago. So, you know, quite a bit after our interview. And there's, he accompanies a YouTube video with it as well. So for me, it's just continuing to play on that. Don't be too hard on yourself. We all experience these things. Use your tools, use your resources, breathe, and work through it. It's not about the end product. It's always about the process and self-nurturing. Christian, you were talking about yoga, and I have started doing so much more yoga on a daily basis. And I find it's when I'm in my child's pose at the beginning or at the end, or Shavasana. I've probably pronounced it wrong at the end, but it's this space where I actually say to myself, this is for me. This is for me. I am nurturing myself and I'm grounding myself. And it's funny, I think, oh, Rachel would be proud of me.
It inspired me, the interview, to read Compassionate Mind. And I've just made a start on that a few chapters in. I've actually got it on an audio book, which I thought would be an easier way to do it, just go to sleep at night listening to that. And it's really very interesting. So as much as I've read so far, I can recommend it.
So as I said, I really loved listening to those two interviews, as did many of our listeners. But if you haven't had a chance to listen to them yet, then you can go back and listen to episode 21, the last episode, is Tanya's interview with Rachel. Episode 20 before that is the one where Christian spoke to Phil. And then earlier when we were speaking about teaching online, this episode was the one before that, episode 19. So let's hear now from Tyson with some TDSIG news.
Hey there, TDSIGers. Well, wait, stop. No, that's ridiculous. We won't ever call you any made-up community building name like this ever again. I promise. We're not that kind of organization. Anyways, I'm Tyson Seaburn, coordinator of TDSIG, and let's talk about what our community's actually been doing lately. Have you read any of our Monday Reading Series articles? They're articles we post kind of like a book club. Right now, there's not a lot of discussion, but they are some interesting articles. So if not, check them out on each Monday across all of our sessions. And on Tuesday morning, Toronto time on Twitter, we have a casual break room chat using the hashtag SigTweetMeet. It's sort of a la ELT chat back in the day. Our series of chats on engagement wraps up this week, so please engage with us. And for the more academic afternoon that you have, check out any of the 7 articles from the first volume of the TDAJ, or Teacher Development Academic Journal. We're very proud, and I'm sure the authors are very proud too. Otherwise, we're cooking up an amazing and unique event in December, which we're collaborating on with Global Issues SIG, maybe a couple of other SIGs, possibly an organization near you. Anyway, I can't wait to tell you more about it, but right now I've got to wait for head office to approve it all. So keep your eyes open for more information about this. And so that's it for now, my lovely teacher development colleagues. And so while you finish off listening to this episode of Developpod, I'm going to watch some more RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars. See you later.
So, looking to the future, we've got some special episodes coming up. Tanya, can you tell us about those?
Yes. Earlier this year, we put out a call for people to win a free IATEFL membership through TDSIG. And part of the competition was to write in and explain who was a big thought leader or influencer for you. And amazingly and happily, we have recorded interviews with those people, with those thought leaders or those influencers, asking the question that our membership winners would love to have been able to ask themselves. So we have 6 amazing interviews lined up. The first one will be with David Farmer, who will be talking about using drama in the classroom and in an online context. Another one will be with Donald Freeman, who will be talking about teacher development and CPD. And we also have another interview with Jim Scrivener, talking about his demand high approach and some great ideas and being able, as I said, being able to answer the questions that our membership winners asked.
And Christian, you've done some interviews as well, haven't you?
Yes, indeed. We've got a really wonderful interview coming up with Jane Willis, being questioned by a former CELTA trainee of mine, Joanna, and we've managed to bring them together, which is really wonderful. And later on, we'll have an interview with Nick Peachy, the Ubermeister of tech, of course. And finally, we'll have an interview with Chia Suan Chong, and that's again with another teacher, this time called Bashak, working in Turkey, and Bashak will be asking the questions. So it's really wonderful to have managed to get teachers and their influencers together in this project. So they're all down the line, and I hope you'll tune in and enjoy those episodes.
So I think that brings us to the end of another episode of Developpod. Thank you, Christian.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Tanya. Always a pleasure.
And thank you, Tanya.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Christian. Always happy to be here.
And thank you to you for listening. Of course, if you want to stay in touch with TDSIG, then look for us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, so the next episode will just pop up there in your feed. And of course, we'd always appreciate a nice review. And until next time, we'll see you on Developpod.